Welcome to the Business of Security podcast, brought to you by TrustMap for Security Performance Management. Your hosts are Chad Beckman and Malcolm Harkins. Today, they talk with Lucinda Dutoit, VP of Human Resources at Digineer. Now, let's get to it.
The industry need to start talking about that we're not doing today.
Information technology is built on a horrible foundation. If we could sort of redo and start from the beginning, we would be so much better off.
If you don't invest in it, keep it running, it will blow up.
You also have to be able to go in with solutions, not just problems. We have a long way to go if we're going to win this fight.
At the end of the day, educated people are really the best countermeasure against all the threats.
Welcome to the Business of Security podcast. This is your host, Chad Beckman. Joining me as always is Malcolm Harkins. So today we have a very special guest, Lucinda Dutoit. Lucinda, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's an honor.
Yeah. You and I have known each other a very long time. I'm not even going to mention the number of years because it will both age us too rapidly.
Me more than you.
I don't know. Not by much. But, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you today and you know, Malcolm and I want to have a discussion with you about this topic is hiring and managing a remote workforce ever since roughly March, April timeframe. You know, the entire world economy has had to switch gears. And how do you begin to recruit, be sure that you're hiring the right people and make sure that the culture fit is there, they have the skills that they're promoting to have. And then how does that segue into the topic of security management and the security considerations? And so I want to kind of dissect that with our discussion today. But before we do, why don't you give our audience a little background on yourself and your company, Digineer?
Sure. So I work for Digineer Incorporated. We are a business and technology consulting company, and we specialize in the healthcare industry. So obviously in the healthcare industry, security is a big thing. What we do is a lot around process and procedure. Large program management specializing in PBMs as well as providers and payers for the healthcare industry. So my background has been in technology for eons, and I love technology because that's where you get some of the smartest people. But my experience has really been building and growing and innovating on the recruiting and the HR side for your small to mid-sized organizations. Because from a culture perspective, smaller and mid-sized organizations fit my personality better than some of the larger organizations out there.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I know that's how you and I met. We were both at the same company and you were responsible for the personnel. Yeah. That was a long time ago. It was a fun experience. And look at that. We got along enough where we're still talking today.
I know. Go figure.
Yeah.
Some people do like HR.
Yeah, there you go. You know, and that's the reason why I wanted to have you on the discussion, because you are my go-to, you know, human resources expert. And Malcolm and I were having this discussion about kind of the relevance of this topic, hiring the right people in a remote workforce and how that can segue into your overall security posture as well and security performance. And I want to hear from you, being the expert in recruiting and managing a workforce, how did your approach change? And maybe it hasn't, maybe it's just the medium is different, but take us through some of the nuances that may needed to be adopted over these last several months.
Yeah. So probably the biggest thing is really kind of instantiating a system for your recruiting process. That's the biggest thing. And how you do that is tie it back to your culture and your values. And that's the core of it. You build off of your culture and values. Once you understand that, what behaviors you want to see out of your workforce, what behaviors you don't want to see, and really truly defining both of those. So it's easy for people to interview and say, yes, this person matches our culture in our organization, or, you know, this person will be better at a different organization. It's not a right or wrong situation. It's just what's best for your organization. So ensuring that we step back and we looked at that to dive into it a little bit deeper and ensure that we are all in alignment. And that's everybody who does our interviews at Digineer. And we've got a kind of a systematic approach in how we do it. It's not one person who does the interview. There's multiple people. So you get an aggregate of feedback, as well as we do use assessments as well, because the assessments have really, truly helped us further in this process, especially with everything that's been going on where everything is remote. The assessment gives you a different perspective that you can rely on and really determine if this person's the best fit and get them through your process a little bit faster.
Is it fair to say that you're relying on assessments more now than perhaps you did pre-COVID?
Yes.
Okay. And then do you run a number of different assessment types and try to determine which is telling the most accurate story between those, or are you running just one type of assessment?
We're actually using the same assessment that we used before, but the intensity or the credence that I put towards it is a little bit higher. Mm. Because what you're looking for is some of those behaviors and aptitude. What is that individual's potential? Also, how independent can this person work? Because nowadays they have to work collaboratively, but they have to do it in an independent way because they have to motivate themselves intrinsically right now versus extrinsically. You know, your extroverts, they get energy from people and they loved the water cooler. So now when you have an extrovert, you have to look at, are they intrinsically motivated to just go after things and still drive themselves when they don't have that group of people around them at the water cooler to help them, versus extrinsically, it is all about getting the kudos from other people, which motivates them. When you're sitting at home and you got your fuzzy slippers on and, you know, your favorite cat sitting on your lap and your dog sitting next to there, well, they're great pals. They don't talk to you and they don't give you that feedback that you would get just by walking by the water cooler. So you do have to tweak a little bit to ensure that you've got people who will drive themselves versus being driven by others' feedback.
Has that changed your hiring profile slightly as a result?
It has tweaked it, yes.
Interesting.
I would say it's a huge divergence, but it's something I pay closer attention to.
Okay. Have you seen the talent pool expand or contract or stay the same based on the need to find those individuals that are self-motivated?
That's a double-edged sword. And it's a double-edged sword because you're still finding the needle in the needle stack. Your needle stack has become bigger though. And so there's more needles that you can find within the needle stack. And that's simply because so many people and so much talent has been laid off, you know, over the last couple of months. So you can be a little bit pickier for the positions that you have coming available.
Interesting.
Because there's more people available and top talent available out there who, one, want to move for more security or want to move for a different opportunity. Because in this time of lack of control, you know, there's lack of control of, you know, am I going to have my job? Lack of control of, I have to wear a face mask when I go outside. Lack of control just in our world, you know, like Minneapolis, you know, we had the riots going on. So the one thing that people do try to control and can control is their job. So you see those individuals who have jobs who are top talent are actually out there looking. So it's easy to find them and bring them on board. For those who happen to get laid off, there's some amazing talent out there that you can go get and bring onto your organization as well. So it's a little bit of a buyer's market right now. But at the same time, in the buyer's market for the companies, you need to still get the right culture fit, treat them fairly, ensure that they're getting everything that they need to stay with your organization for a long time period.
Let's talk about that culture fit for a moment. You know, I'll share a quick story. We've recently expanded dramatically, grew our team by 150% in 2.5 months. And the only way we successfully did that, in my opinion, is we leveraged our network and said, hey, who do you know? This is kind of what we're looking for. Brought on those individuals after one or two conversations because we leveraged our network. People that, for example, somebody that Malcolm worked with at his prior role was looking and made the introduction to this person. And after two or three conversations, we settled on a good fit culturally, personality wise. Experience was already a check mark before the first call and hire that person. Now, when you're, you know, granted 150% growth is large growth, but it still was only, you know, maybe 15 people max that we brought on. That doesn't scale much beyond probably 20, 25 people where you do need to start to go into a talent pool where nobody in your company or in your immediate circle has experience with those individuals. Yeah. So when we talk about culture, that quickly leads me to discussing about trust as well with those individuals. Can I trust them to do the job? Are they, how do we ensure that they're going to follow our policies and treat the customer appropriately and so on? So I'm curious to hear about maybe what are some mechanisms in place or how you've did your homework in the pre-screening process or the hiring process to ensure that that culture was a fit and they had the level of trust you felt comfortable with to put them onto your team.
Mm-hmm. It's really the system that you use for your recruiting process and hiring process. And I can talk specifically from the hiring processes that I've built at a number of companies is you have the first interview, and the defined first interview is really about figuring out, one, are they a culture fit? Do they have the general capabilities to fit the role? And are they going to be a potential to grow within their current role and have the desire to do that? So you define your interview process with each person who has a very specific role to play in the interviewing process and a very specific group of questions to ask and how they report back to the next person who does the interviewing. And the next person who does the interviewing has a different role. It could be, in our case, because we deal with technical technology individuals, there's a technical interview where they actually have to ask very specific questions about being a business analyst or a project manager or a program manager. It's how they would go ahead and work on a project with somebody and dig in further from the questions that the first interview had. Mm. And then it follows to the third interview and the final interview, and that person dig down further. So you're basically peeling the onion on this individual and figuring out what works well for him, what doesn't work well for him.
One thing I want to ask on that is, you know, once you've got this person hired now and they join, how do you determine that? How do you sort of indoctrinate them into, you know, the culture of your company. And, I want to hear from you, but how that advice might apply to everybody else that is trying to hire and retain and make people feel like they belong to a team, even though they are working independently at home and not interacting at the water cooler, as you said.
Yeah, that takes a very conscious effort of touching base more regularly than you did before. Mm. That is ensuring that when you do your onboarding for orientation, you spend even more time with them and walking them through your culture, the behaviors that are expected, the behaviors that are considered above and beyond, checking in with them on a regular basis to see what questions they have, setting them up with a peer so they can work with that peer, making sure that manager and that individual are connecting at least weekly, if not more often. One of the other things that we have changed is we have brought in a communication tool that facilitated by an HR person, the manager and the employee sit down and actually talk about their communication styles, what works well, what doesn't work well. And they spend an hour on that within the first couple of weeks that they're within the organization. So it is really about taking a much more process-driven component of bringing that new hire on board and getting them up to productivity than it ever was before. They don't know who to contact. So you want to make sure that you broaden that contact list for them. And introduce them to other people in the department and the organization faster than they would have if they were working in the office with these people. Because it's not going to naturally happen. You have to force it to happen and put the avenue in the street and help them pave it.
Malcolm, you know, you're at a startup right now. What has your experience been with the team and following a similar process, looking for new talent to bring on the team and keeping the existing team members engaged?
Yeah, you know, it's very similar, but at the same time, a little bit, you know, different. The startup that I'm at, Cymatic, we're almost all by and large remote anyways. You know, the co-founders are back on the East Coast. I'm out on the West Coast. We've got another West Coast person. We've got developers in Mexico. We've got people in New York. You know, so we were already a diverse remote company just by the nature of how the company started and the talent that the co-founders wanted to hire. So I would say it's almost been built into our DNA from the beginning. And I think, as Lucinda said, it becomes a how do you interview? How do you assess? What type of dialogues do you have? What type of independence can the person have on their own, and how do you create those touch points, you know, virtually, either in video, phone, text, Slack, IM, you know, all those type of things so that you've got a stickiness, right, with the people and you can indoctrinate them effectively and efficiently and then get them productive, you know, but we also have the same challenge, right? Think of all the people who went remote. There's the hiring, but all the people you put out remote that if they were used to the water cooler and used to the physical environment, that could cause disruptions. And on the other hand, again, I've got my middle son has Asperger's syndrome, so he's on the autism spectrum disorder, right? Think of the amazing talent that we're now probably hiring because they are remote and their idiosyncrasies of making eye contact and being physically in a room with individuals who are grilling them with questions. They might shine now remotely where they would have floundered physically, right? Mm-hmm. So in many ways, it might actually give us a better talent pool. You know, so you can look at it, I think, from a few different angles sometimes, right? Mm-hmm.
That's a compelling perspective, honestly. I appreciate you sharing that. I think you're absolutely right. I think, you know, I haven't thought of it this way, but based on, you know, what Lucinda said and now what you shared, it does seem like the talent pool has dramatically opened, just like an employee can now sell their belongings and, you know, live out of a camper if they want, assuming they have internet access, and go from state park to state park or what have you.
I actually know a peer who did that we were on a call a few weeks ago, and they're literally outside of their RV and they're just bumming around and they're living remotely.
Power to them. You know, if you can do it, great. So let's segue into kind of the next piece of this. So we covered, you know, the recruiting and determining and filtering through those candidates, the talent pool that is now available, and then how to begin to indoctrinate those new employees into the company. I want to start talking about, now that we have this ecosystem of new employees and existing employees, some of whom, you know, the new employees never were at the office, and the employees that have been around for a while were at the office, but now are working from home. How do you establish trust in that environment and teamwork? But then how does that help to influence the overall security, right? The security concerns that go along with this. And beyond the workstation security, but, you know, there's many levels to this, many layers to the security conversation. But I want to kind of start with that. And Lucinda, I'd like for you to, if you could, get us started on that topic of trust in the organization.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that, once again, that comes down to your culture. In the culture I work in, we grant trust. So when somebody comes on board and you've been hired, you already have the trust. And if you really break trust down, there's three components of trust. There is capability. Is the individual capable of doing what you're asking them to do? If they're not, you can get them the skills to actually do that. So another part of trust is their reliability. If they say they're going to do it, are they actually going to do it? If somebody breaks that reliability, you have a conversation with them and you can hopefully get past that. That's a coachable thing. The third part of trust is intent. And intent is it a positive intent or a negative intent? That you can't change. So if you really kind of break down those three components, you can clearly get to whether or not you can trust the individual or coach the individual through what you're possibly going through, or what the situation is. If it is, you don't trust them because of their intent, you can't change that. You might as well start wishing them good luck on their new venture and their new career. The other two you can work on. So when you bring somebody into that trust circle that you do have at your organization, know each one of those components and then give them the latitude to be able to do that. Now, there's always outside sources that don't have the best intent and have nothing to do with your current employee. It's how do you protect them against those individuals? I've seen over the last couple of months more and more scams that are going on and how they affect your employees. One of our employees fell for one of those scams and she was out $2,000.
Wow.
So how do you protect them from that? And that's a big thing, I think, right now, is how do you protect your employees from getting taken advantage of, not necessarily whether or not you trust your employee.
So that's interesting. Can you share a little bit of example of that scam itself? Was it like a phishing email that was sent to her work email account?
It was. That we have noticed more phishing going on over the last couple of months because people can't just walk over to somebody's desk. Hey, did you get this? This seems weird.
Okay.
But what happened to our employee was the individual used our CEO's name. She was newer to the organization and spoofed his email. So it looked like it came to him if you take a quick glance and said, hey, I need a huge favor. Would you go out and get me five $200 gift certificates and send me all the information on those gift certificates? So she did, sent the information. She was out the $2,000. And then she called and said, hey, I don't think this was legit, was it? And we're like, it wasn't. But that was probably the third time I heard that happen to somebody, not in our organization, but in other organizations.
That brings up an interesting perspective is, you know, protecting that remote workforce. And, you know, Malcolm, you've got experience with this as well, is how do we, you know, with the entire workforce, in some cases anyway, not all, but most cases, being remote, there's a new layer of controls, or those controls maybe already existed, but those controls need to be emphasized more so than they have in the past. So when we think about trust and security, security posture, security performance, Malcolm, what's your perspective on how security performance and overall enabling that trust with your workforce has changed in the last several months?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, right? So I think we can break this down in a couple different things. If your employees already had a laptop and therefore had the potential to work remotely, in reality, if they were falling prey to risky issues today, now that they're at home, versus yesterday when they weren't, I would go, shame on you, you didn't have the right controls in place to begin with. Which gets back to security performance management, the security team, the technology team, doing what they should have been doing all along. And again, I have a strong personal view on this. A lot of organizations, a lot of CIOs, a lot of CISOs, heck, the security marketplace itself blames the user. Hence all these phish me things. And I've known some peers that have gone, even a few years ago, that I've gone toe-to-toe with in peer forums, where they had a three strikes out. If they failed for the phishing test three times in a row, they didn't get their bonus or they got performance managed or whatever. And I'm like, so does that same rule apply for your CEO and general counsel? Because I'll own them in a second, right? And what I see is the security industry and again, a lot of IT folks and stuff like that, we want to blame the user. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, if a user clicks on something and something bad happens, that's a technology failure, yeah. Right? A phishing email getting through that was spoofed from the CEO is a technology failure, right? And so I look at it and I go, why didn't our controls work? Now, if the user gets a phone call, pretends to be somebody, they give their username or password or get coached that way, that's a person issue. Now, the reality is, we're all more susceptible at higher levels of stress and emotion, right? Hence, the likelihood that given all what's going on in the world, we would be all more susceptible to being manipulated given the emotional state and the degradation of our mental states that will cause us to miss small things. That we need to just reaffirm and push on. But if you already had people with laptops and they could work from home or work from a hotel or whatever, and you're seeing bigger risk issues, it says your technology wasn't good enough to begin with. Now, if you had people that were on desktops that you've now had to push remotely, that's where you're going to have to do more training. That's where you're going to have to do more awareness. That's where you're going to have to put in some technical controls to think about those things. But at the same time, again, there's context. If I'm walking around the cafeteria having a sensitive conversation, let's say Lucinda and I'm a manager and we're having a conversation about an employee performance issue. If we're doing that in the middle of the cafeteria and a bunch of people could hear, shame on us. We should be doing that in a conference room, right? So now you bring that into the context of being at home. I've got kids, I've got spouses, I've got partners, I've got other people. Who's in earshot, right? And again, that's the type of awareness we need to do, but that's also perhaps the awareness that we're failing at to begin with, because we weren't talking about that when the sales team was on the road and traveling, where people are out to dinner, right? All of those conversations could be heard in a public context anyway. So I think it's just a mix shift. And then we just have to really get back to, are we effectively and efficiently managing our security effort, which gets back to security performance management. And if we had that to begin with, we would just be making fine-tuned adjustments in the knobs that we had, and we wouldn't be having the problem, rather than this wholesale, oh my God, the sky is falling, you know, type thing. And if you had good discipline and good control and good security performance management, it's, you know what to do and where you need to play with your dials. And when you don't, well, again, shame on you for not doing a good job managing security.
Yeah, exactly. It's looking, I think in a nutshell, try to summarize what you said there is having good security hygiene and a performance management view of your security posture is no different today than what it should have been previously. We just need to pay attention to a couple of areas like education or awareness, if you will, as well as maybe reinforcing some of those technologies, because we have various different types of endpoints than maybe we did previously.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously the homes are being more targeted. I was on a call with some peers and they were like, yeah, our the homes are being more targeted now than ever. And we're seeing an uptick on that. I'm like, why is that any news? That's nothing new. It's like, you know, you've had an 80% laptop workforce for 15 years. And now you're just starting to think about the home network. Shame on you. Right. Yeah.
Goes back to security performance management. I can't stress that enough. Having a full view of your security posture and being able to apply the necessary effort towards those items that are underperforming your expected results, right? Ultimately, your risk and your risk appetite. Lucinda, from a management consulting firm, in your shoes, what type of concerns does your workforce have in this regard, when we speak about security and handling data and conversations in the appropriate context?
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, there's the technology security and then there's the people security, and they're two totally different things and you have to manage them differently as well. And Malcolm made a couple of really good points of, you have to fine tune what's going on for individuals on the technology side, but you have to be cautious as well as who's around you in your home or around your home. If you have your windows open on a beautiful day, who's walking by? Is it a competitor that you didn't even know about? But how do you manage that as well? Mm-hmm. So when it comes to how we are protecting our employees from the technology side as well as the people side, it's just, you just have to be a little bit more hyper-vigilant of what you're doing and who you're talking to, because it's easy to start just going off like you're in a protected environment. Mm-hmm. And then there's somebody sitting at a coffee shop right next to you who's your direct competitor. So, and sitting outside. So you just have to be a little more wary of your surroundings than you were before.
You know, that reminds me when we were all traveling more, and airports, they seem to be like, for some reason or another, I felt like people thought they were a neutral zone. You could be sitting at a gate and you inevitably have two or three or four people on a business call, phone call. And, you know, there was very specific deal information that's being talked about. Mm-hmm. I mean, to the point where it's practically insider trading in some circumstances to audit findings. I've heard those. I think if nothing else, this paradigm shift that we've lived through over the last several months has heightened hopefully our awareness of being more cognizant of how we're using information and sharing that with others, which both yourself and Malcolm have highlighted here. Lucinda, before we wrap it up, I want to ask you, you know, what advice would you give individuals? Because it appears that we may be in this work mode for at least a few more months. until something significant changes with the vaccine or some other protections. You know, how can organizations prepare to thrive in the long term in the context of their workforce and building a workforce that has the trust, and you give a great definition of that, but the ability to always have that pipeline of really good talent.
Mm-hmm. Never stop recruiting. It is always about networking and connecting and understanding who is out there and what their talents and potential are. Doesn't matter if we're in a recession, if we're in a boom, if we're in the middle of a pandemic, or nothing's going on, keep building that network, because that's the most important thing, is to continue to do that. It might take you 5 years to bring the person on, but when you bring them on, boy, they're going to make a difference. So don't stop that.
And never give up on a resource, it sounds like.
No, you push, you help them grow. You really make sure that they're getting everything they need to be able to blossom. But also knowing when to cut and let that person be successful somewhere else, because they might not be successful in your organization as well.
Very good. Malcolm, how about you?
You know, I think exactly what Lucinda said, you know, never stop recruiting, but I would expand it to, I think a lot of people, when they think of recruiting, they think of outside. Now, in a small company, that's easier because you're small, so you have to generally look outside. But in a larger company, never stop recruiting internally. There's a lot of diamonds in the rough, right? And so for me, it's a never stop recruiting, both internally and externally. And even on the internal side, even with a small company, you're recruiting them in a different way, because you're, to Lucinda's thing, you're growing them, you're cultivating them, you're continuing to recruit them to want to believe and belong in the company, right? Particularly if they're good talent, because you don't want them to leave, because you know everybody else is constantly recruiting. So if you ignore your internal talent and stop recruiting them, right, then you're gonna have a brain drain.
Always invest in your employees.
What I just heard there is from both of you, trust is reciprocal.
Absolutely.
Without a doubt.
I think that's a perfect note to end on. I appreciate both of you contributing to this conversation. It's one that's very relevant. It's going to continue to be relevant for, you know, the foreseeable future. And with that, we make this a wrap. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Business of Security podcast, brought to you by TrustMap. We want to hear from our listeners. If you have a topic you'd like to discuss on the podcast or would like to continue the conversation, please connect with us on Twitter at CyberSecPodcast or email us at businessofsecurity@trustsds.com. We want to extend a special thank you to today's guest, Lucinda Dutoit. Our hosts today were Chad Beckman, founder of TrustMap, and Malcolm Harkins, Chief Security and Trust Officer at Cymatic. You can connect with both Chad and Malcolm on LinkedIn and learn more about TrustMap at trustmap.com. You can find out more about Malcolm and Cymatic at cymatic.io. Our show was produced by Dan Rollins with LiveWire Films. You can connect with Dan on LinkedIn and learn more about LiveWire Films at livewirefilms.com. Now stay tuned for our next episode of the Business of Security podcast. And that's a wrap.